From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, policies that endanger Americans, Chinese spying, the economy continues to worsen, and a move to value life. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch Live, Tony Perkins was joined by former acting director of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf. They talked about the growing issue of left-wing prosecutors not prosecuting current gun laws. Here's Tony Perkins.
Chad, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Tony.
So let me ask you this. You've been in law enforcement for a long time. You've seen a lot. What do you think about this heightened focus on gun laws that's simply restricting gun ownership as opposed to the criminal use of those guns?
Well, I think you had it right. I think when we take a look at these different incidents that are going on across the country, I think it's okay to talk about, are there ways in which we can look at different laws to see if they need to be tightened? But I think the first reaction of just imposing more and more gun control laws and putting those on the books when certain gun laws right now are not being enforced. And what we know are that criminals, by the very nature and the definition of being a criminal or being someone that is very intent on doing a very bad thing, they don't pay attention to these laws. They are intent on getting a weapon and doing harm. They are likely going to do it. So a lot of our time and a lot of our attention and effort needs to be put back on the mental health issues facing our country, the fatherless issues facing our youth, and getting back to some of the morality issues facing this country. I think that goes a long way to addressing some of the issues that we're facing in Uvalde and certainly other places of what's going on out there. Just simply saying we need more restrictions on our Second Amendment rights, I don't think is really going to solve the underlying problem.
You are spot on. Because I think when you look at the number of laws that we have on the books today, you know, just passing a law is not going to stop a problem.
Right.
Because you said, if people are going to violate a law, one law, they're going to violate another law. And I do think we've got to step back, and I've been advocating this with policymakers, especially among them, Republicans mostly, because the Democrats don't want to touch this. It's the morality issue. It is the heart. And when you talk about that, you go back to what George Washington warned. He said, look, if you want peace and prosperity, you have to have morality. And don't think you can have morality without religion. And we've spent decades now. Fortunately, we've had a couple of court decisions here recently that's starting to reverse this process. But we've had policymakers pushing God out of the public square, and any conversation about him and morality is out the window.
Well, it's not only pushing it out of the public square, it's pushing it out of the hearts and minds of our youth, you know, whether they're seeing it on television, or I should say not seeing it on television, or and the video games culture and everything else, it's not front and center as it used to be. And that is that the faith in the faith community. And so I think there's a role to play there. Obviously, I go back to the mental health issues facing the country. There probably needs to be some investment, more investment on addressing that issue as well. It's not just one issue. It's not just one solution that we need to look at. We need to start looking at a variety of solutions. We have to identify that this is a crisis that we actually need to spend some time and attention and focus on, and not simply say, oh, we need another gun control measure that's going to solve the issue. It's not going to solve the issue. I think most reasonable people know it's not going to solve the issue.
Yeah, it makes policymakers feel good, and they can go home and go back to business as usual. I do want to talk about the mental health thing, because there has been bipartisan focus on mental health. This measure that was passed is going to increase funding for mental health. But I don't think, you know, going back to what you said about morality and religion, I don't think we can separate mental health from the faith community either. Because a lot of this is driven by a sense of desperation, lack of purpose, things that that religion provides in a young man's life. And so I think we can't separate that. And we're still seeing in some of these programs, religious entities are not to be involved. This is all, you know, clinical. This is secular. And I think that's only going to make the problem worse.
Well, I would agree with you. Look, anytime that we we divorce or we somehow exclude certain communities or populations, and in this case, the faith-based community, from certain solution sets, saying that you can't receive funding to address mental health issues because of your faith. We know that that doesn't work in the long run. We know that you need a sort of an all of the above approach. And there are certain segments of the population, whether these are youths that are in trouble or others, that may be open to a faith-based community approach, may be open to that type of audience talking to them in a way that a law enforcement officer or another individual in their community may not be. So to shut these different avenues off, I think, is not the right approach. I certainly agree with you.
I want to switch gears, something that you are extremely familiar with, and that is our border. As the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, you spent a lot of time there. In fact, I saw the change myself with my own eyes, where there was, a rush across the border when you guys first took office. And then under your leadership, I mean, there was nothing. It was a ghost town on our southern border. You know, Texas, without the administration doing anything, we're having these record numbers of illegals crossing the country, crossing the border. So they're taking it on themselves to protect their border. Now we have the Department of Justice investigating the state of Texas for protecting their own borders. Is that a misplaced focus?
Well, of course it is. And it just goes to show you sort of the backwards priorities of the Biden administration when it comes to border security and immigration enforcement. They don't have a strategy. What we continue to see is a historic crisis. And when I say that, it's not just it's higher than it's ever been. It's higher than it's ever been by a factor of two or three or four that we are seeing. And we're seeing this lawlessness across this border. But we also continue to see the administration doubling down on certain rules and regulations that can continue to attract and continue to incentivize this illegal behavior. And if you're an American, you know, you're American sitting in the middle of the country or somewhere else, or even in Texas or Arizona along that border, you're throwing your hands up and you're saying, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for this administration to actually become serious about securing the border, securing American communities, stopping the human trafficking and stopping the illegal narcotics coming across the border? What is it going to take? Clearly, the numbers alone are not swaying the administration. They continue to go down this strategy that each and every month it gets worse and worse and worse. And so I get frustrated knowing that there are solutions out there to secure that border. It takes leadership, it takes will, and it takes an ability to make some hard decisions, knowing that you're going to upset certain folks. But if you decide to put Americans first and you decide to look after their best interests first, then I think the policy solutions present themselves to you in a way that becomes very, very clear. And we certainly dared that under the Trump administration. And there's a way to fix this crisis. Unfortunately, they have dug the hole so deep that it's going to take them months and months and months to dig out of it if they choose to dig out of it.
Right. Secretary, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. Always great to see you. Stick with us, folks. We're back after this.
Do you and your family feel equipped to give a reason for the hope that you have in today's culture? The mission of FRC's Online Center for Biblical Worldview is to train Christians in advancing faith in their communities in the public square, as now more than ever, we need to be grounded in the truths of God's Word. To access a variety of free resources rooted in Scripture on topics like voting, religious liberty, abortion, and much more, head over to frc.org/worldview.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In a first-ever joint news conference, the head of the FBI and Britain's MI5 announced that China's global espionage program has reached a critical level. Joining Tony on Thursday was FRC's expert on China, Gordon Chang.
Gordon, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Now, I'm sure this did not catch you by surprise, although this is quite significant for two agencies, one from the UK and one from the US, to be so public in alerting the world to this threat.
FBI director Ray's comments were things that we have heard before for the last couple of years. But what did take me by surprise, Tony, was that he was sharing the stage with Ken McCallum, who is, as you point out, the head of MI5, domestic intelligence, in the UK. And really, the message was this is a threat not just against the United States, and it was not just against the UK, but it's across the Western world, and indeed the world, the partners of the Western world. So China right now is in a difficult position because they can't say, oh, it's just America.
So, I mean, given the fact that, as you said, this is unprecedented, I mean, does this tell us something to the degree of the threat, how serious it is? Does this tell us something?
It tells us something about the degree of the threat. But as mentioned, we've heard that before. What I think is important is that you are seeing partners of the U.S. say this, and also the Biden administration doing this in a much more public way. I think that this is a symptom of a change in mentality in Washington, where even in very high profile platforms, we are now seeing more honest conversations about China. In the past, we didn't have those. And now I think that it's important that we are going in that direction. So that's why I think that yesterday's event was so significant.
Could possibly part of this be to box China in when it comes to Taiwan? Because Director Ray yesterday warned that if China was to forcibly take Taiwan, of course, he's speaking to business leaders, he said, quote, it would represent one of the most horrific business disruption the world has ever seen, end quote.
There is some of that there. But really what the Biden administration should be doing is forcing American companies off Chinese soil. And unfortunately, President Biden has been taking actions to encourage American companies to stay in China. So, for instance, when Biden talks about waiving tariffs, the Section 301 tariffs that President Trump imposed in 2018, in fact, we know that a number of companies which were thinking of reshoring, in other words, bringing their operations back to this side of the Pacific, they stopped those efforts. So I think that Director Ray's comments were important, but it's really up to the president now to take those actions to really give meaning to Director Ray's words.
Now, Gordon, there was also some reference in yesterday's conversation about the lessons that China has learned based on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. What have they learned from that?
Well, they've learned a number of things. The most important, Tony, I believe, is the failure of deterrence. The United States, the European Union, and Great Britain had an economy 25.1 times larger than Russia's at the end of last year. And yet we failed to stop Russia from invading Ukraine, even though there was perfect intelligence on this. And I think China's looked at that and said, well, you know, if they failed with regard to Russia, they're certainly going to fail with regard to China. And the other thing that I think that China's learned is that although American sanctions and the sanctions effort was somewhat important, it has not been effective enough to stop Russia. And I think China's thinking, well, you know, we don't have to worry about American-led sanctions. So those are two very bad messages that Beijing has taken on board recently.
So with that in mind, Gordon, should the game plan for the U.S. be changing and adapting to a different landscape now?
Oh, absolutely. And with regard to Taiwan, for instance, we've had this policy of strategic ambiguity where we tell neither Beijing nor Taipei what we would do in the case of imminent conflict. Now, that worked, obviously, but it worked in a benign era, and we are no longer in a benign era. We need to be much more specific. The Biden administration, I think, needs to be clear that the United States will defend Taiwan. You know, Biden has said that on a number of occasions, three of them, in fact. But after each of those occasions, his White House and the Defense Department have walked those comments back. And I think that that has not been a good lesson for that Beijing has seen, because what they're saying is that the United States is in disarray, at least under the Biden administration. So that's, again, another bad message, another bad signal that we're sending to Beijing.
Yeah, it's a bad message, but not necessarily a untruth. It is a reality, I think, unfortunately. Gordon Chang, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Tony.
You can find out more about Gordon Chang when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Are you a university student, specifically one who wants to grow as a Christian leader to positively influence public policy and the culture? Look no further.
Family Research Council has a life-changing 12 to 15-week internship program that will give you real-world experience working directly with our experts who will guide you in pursuing careers of influence so you can make an impact wherever God calls. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in downtown D.C. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In spite of continuing bad news on the economic front, the Biden administration continues to say that the economy is strong. I'm not so sure about that. Joining Tony Perkins on Tuesday to talk about it was economist and senior fellow at FreedomWorks, Stephen Moore.
Steve, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Tony.
All right, so the Supreme Court is responsible for destabilizing America. Somehow, I guess we just jumped over all the policies of the Biden administration that has left Americans kind of wondering what the future holds.
Well, first of all, let's just say that it was really, really bad form for the president to say that about our Supreme Court when he's over there in Europe. You know, that's just something presidents that have class don't do. Even if you disagree, as some people do with some of these Supreme Court decisions, it's just it's really incredibly improper and unpatriotic, frankly. In terms of the economy, look, Tony, this economy is in really rough shape right now. And Americans know that. I don't have to tell you the numbers. Everyone watching this show knows inflation is as high as it's been in 40 years. We are actually in a, I love these, this talk about all these economists say we might be headed to recession. Tony, we're in a recession right now. You know, the economy grew at, contracted by 1.5% in the first quarter of this year. The latest estimates that are that, it, you know, the the year, half year ended on July 1st, that in the second quarter that the economy contracted by another 2%. That's technically a recession. Now, it's a soft recession, but the economy is not doing well. And those numbers that you just recited from polls indicate that Americans can feel it and they know it.
Are we out of the woods yet? Have we seen the worst of this when it comes to inflation and higher interest rates and the higher costs that Americans are going to have to be paying for essentials?
That's a tough question. Here's my problem. We could get out of these woods. Absolutely. We could have a very mild recession and move on. And I actually believe, Tony, that if Donald Trump were still president, you know, I advised him, so I'm biased, but I think the economy would be flying high right now. I don't think we'd be talking about a recession. We'd be talking about a booming economy with COVID over and people getting back to work and businesses getting back open and people going to movies and restaurants again. So there's no reason the economy shouldn't be booming, except that Joe Biden has made so many policy blunders. And it starts, in my opinion, Tony, with the war on American energy. It's inexcusable. It's put us in a situation where that if you're wondering why you're paying $5 a gallon gas, it's because we're 3 million barrels a day lower in U.S. energy production than we should be. And you saw just this past weekend, the Wall Street Journal reported that Biden is now taking off limits a lot of our offshore drilling. Wait a minute. I thought he said he's doing everything he can to lower gas prices.
Right. Well, that's one question I want to ask you, Steve. How significant are energy costs in driving inflation and the impacting the bottom line of American families?
I mean, there's nothing that's more central to our economy than energy. Energy is embedded in the cost of everything we have, everything that we do. Every job requires energy, our construction, our manufacturing, the production of cars and steel, the food that we eat. People underestimate how important energy is to a safe and affordable energy, a food supply. And now, Tony, I don't know if you've been following this, but many countries around the world are facing food shortages. And even here in the United States, you're starting to see, you know, problems with getting the supply of food on the grocery store shelves. So that's a bit of a crisis, I'd say.
And it all goes back to a fundamentally flawed energy policy by this administration from day one of his taking the presidency.
Well, that's, I would say, his central mistake. It's this ridiculous obsession on the left with climate change. I read through these bills, Tony, these, you know, 800 and 1,000 page bills, that Biden and the Democrats put together. And I'm not exaggerating. Every other paragraph is about climate change. They are completely obsessed with that issue. They're willing to destroy the American economy and the American family to so-called, you know, change the temperature of the planet as if the government's going to be able to do that. And at the same time, I want your viewers to know that China and Russia are the big winners of this policy because they are filling the gap in the energy. So China, their coal production has quadrupled over the last 5 years. Russia's war machine is being financed with petrodollars. Did you know Russia now right now has the strongest currency in the world? How can that be?
Because
the answer is because they're making
of the
so
energy,
much money.
The oil.
Exactly.
Steve, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. Always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Folks, stick around. We're coming back after this.
Did you know that pornography, sex trafficking, and abortion are all linked and on the rise across the globe? Issues such as pornography, human trafficking, drug legalization, and abortion are all violations of human dignity and have resulted in the devaluation of human life in our culture. Educate yourself on the harms of these issues so that you can offer hope. Learn more at frc.org/life.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In a little less than a month, Kansas will be the first state in the nation to have the abortion issue on the ballot following the overturning of Roe. When voters in the state head for the polls on August 2nd, they will have the opportunity to weigh in on the Value Them Both amendment that will defend Kansas's existing pro-life laws and ensure the state does not become a destination for extreme abortion procedures like New York and California. Joining Tony on Wednesday to talk about it was Melissa Oden, founder and director of Abortion Survivors Network.
Melissa, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to see you, Tony. Thank you.
So let's start. Just give us a brief overview of where Kansas is right now on the abortion issue and what this amendment is all about.
Yeah, all eyes are on Kansas currently, Tony. We knew that this was going to happen after the Dobbs ruling came out and Roe was overturned. But it is really an important time for Kansans, and it's important for people to stand alongside Kansans as they pray and really for our nation. Kansas, their liberal activist Supreme Court in 2019 found a, presumed right to abortion in the state constitution. And what that did was put us in this position, Tony, where every pro-life law passed for decades is now presumed unconstitutional. So this is about reasonable regulation of the abortion industry. You know, if you read the mainstream media and it's picking up every single day, they would tell you that this is a ban, but this is about regulating the abortion industry, whether we have any ability to come to a consensus and pass pro-life laws.
Well, and it's also about who gets the chance, who's going to do this. Is it going to be the court or is it going to be the elected representatives of the people?
Absolutely. I don't believe that people want people in robes to be making those decisions for the people of Kansas. The power should rest with the people. And even though the Supreme Court ruling, you know, gave other people across the states, in many states, that ability to make that kind of decision, the people of Kansas have not yet been heard, and they need to be heard on August 2nd with a vote yes.
Now, early voting actually starts, I think, in a little over a week, does it not?
It does. We are in a really important time. And as you can imagine, Tony, the mainstream media, of course, is putting out all sorts of misconceptions about what the amendment really is and really what even Roe being overturned means. And so it is really so important for, you know, folks to become knowledgeable and for people to tune in to shows like yours to be given the truth.
So I know we've got a lot of listeners in Kansas. The program pretty much blankets the state of Kansas. So, folks, this is an opportunity to let your voice be heard. And as Melissa said, post-Roe, the nation's going to be watching to see what the voters in Kansas. And, you know, Kansas, no offense, folks, but Kansas, they're kind of quirky on some things. Sometimes they're conservative, sometimes they're not. I'm hoping that on the life issue, they show up en masse in support this very reasonable amendment that simply says what the legislature has done stays, and they have the opportunity to change the law in the future, not the courts.
Absolutely. Think everything from, you know, sanitized clinics to parental notification. Those are reasonable limits on the abortion industry that the people of Kansas should be able to come to a consensus with. And so without voting yes, Tony, we are looking at an unregulated abortion industry that becomes a destination. Guttmacher even was putting out statistics months ago saying they were expecting over 1,000% increase in the number of abortions in Kansas. Since 2019, we've seen. Isn't that wild?
I was just going to say, and that's something that historically Kansas has actually been a destination for late term abortion. So this is not theoretical; it's very real. And I think this gives Kansans an opportunity to go to the polls and vote, and then they can elect representatives who will take hopefully the right position, as opposed to judges taking those positions that are oftentimes beyond the reach of voters. So, Melissa, where can folks find out more about getting information, sharing this information with their friends about the Value Them Both campaign?
Absolutely. ValueThemBoth.com. Follow our social media channels. You know, we've got great ads coming out really showing people the difference between California and Kansas and medical professionals and others who support the amendment.
Well, I mean, Kansas is in the heartland, and it should reflect those heartland values. And so I hope that Kansans will turn out in mass, pro-life Kansans, and support, again, this very reasonable constitutional amendment. Melissa, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. If you didn't catch that, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. But look, folks, again, I know we blanket the state of Kansas. Talk to your friends. Bring this up. Pastors, you need to be talking about this. The church, and I've been talking to those on the ground there, and the support is a little slow. All right, churches need to engage. Pastors need to speak about this, because this really will kind of set the pace for the nation in this post-Roe period. Okay, so get ready. You need to show up and vote.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.